Welcome to Lynn Cullen Live, talk radio without the static. Email your questions and comments to lynncullenshow@gmail.com. And now your host, Lynn Cullen.
Hey, welcome. Monday, January 17, a dog's birthday. Tomorrow's my birthday. Yeah. A lot of birthdays. Next week's my son's birthday. Well, how you doing? Beautiful outside. I love it. I was talking to my brother last night, I think, and we were talking. I mentioned how I had gone walking in the snow last night before the ill-fated Steeler game. And no one was out. It was dark. It was black and white. It was snow. And the streets hadn't, you know, been touched. There were no cars. And I just found it so beautiful. My brother and I were talking about how I guess the fact that we grew up in Wisconsin, that snow is just this marvel. We don't have a negative view of it. And he was saying that how so many of his childhood memories, the ones that are almost sensual, you know, because it's about sound and smell and how air feels. And he says they almost all seem to be in the winter. Yeah. So I just got to say, I love this. I know a lot of you don't. I was just out shoveling my walkway. You already can't tell that I did because the wind's picked up and it's covered it up. But anyway, I like it, and I hope it's not causing you too much difficulty. I've been up for a long time, had a rough start to my day. I awoke about 5, I think. 5, right? 5:15. I awoke to the sound of a dog puking. You know, I used to do a great imitation of cats puking, but I haven't lived with a cat for a while, so I'm a little off. And cat puking and dog puking are different, but they're the kinds of sounds that will get me out of a deep sleep. Because for some reason, my dog, when he needs to vomit, runs to the nearest lightest colored area rug he can find. And knowing that, I leapt out of my bed, leapt out of the bed, ran through the house, first trying to, and he was in the living room. And yes, he was sitting right there looking sheepish under the piano. And I couldn't find any puke. I looked throughout. I looked, checked all rugs. I couldn't find it. I was puke blind. My sister has something she calls refrigerator blindness. It's when generally men, sorry guys, but generally men open up a refrigerator door and they say, where's the, fill in the blank, where's the milk? And invariably the milk is literally right in front of them. Refrigerator blindness. It afflicts a lot of, I don't know if it's just all men or if it's husbands, because I think husbands end up feeling that that's part of a wife's duty to understand where everything in the refrigerator is at any given time. So even though he's standing in front of it, door open, looking right at the milk, he can't see it. So I had something like dog puke blindness, because a second go-around, I did in fact find on a corner of the lightest rug near the piano, yes. And it was a direct result of my dog's thinking that toys are things you eat, because I saw the eviscerated remains of a supposedly indestructible dog, a toy, in the contents. So after picking that stuff up, I got to tell you, I didn't get back to sleep. So I've been up for some time. And it could have been worse. There was should engage in introspection and thought and gratitude for this man's life. However untimely his demise. But that brings me to a George Carlin quote I came across today. George Carlin, I mean, you know, I got to tell you, he's a go-to guy when you need, he was a, you know, they say Mark Twain, through his wit, was able to, you know, eviscerate the politics of the day, maybe the culture a bit. But, boy, I don't even think Mark Twain can hold a candle to Carlin. George Carlin. Humans are the only species on Earth that deliberately kill members of our own species. Personal gain or even pleasure. We're also the only species that deliberately kills members of another species for personal gain or pleasure. That's us, human beings, murderers. And did you ever stop to think who it is we kill? It's always people who told us to live together in harmony and try to love one another. Jesus. Told him. Gandhi. Lincoln. John Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy. Martin Luther King. Edgar Evers, Malcolm X, John Lennon, they all said the same thing. Try to live together peacefully. Yeah. And then I went looking for a quote of Dr. King's that had really impressed me the first time I saw it, because I thought in it he explained how it happens that people become so hateful and prejudiced. And it has to do with the fact that they don't know the other. And that has to do with segregation. That people, like-minded people, flock together, live together. They separate themselves. We separate ourselves into groups in which we feel comfortable. And those are rarely diverse. Most humans are most comfortable with their own kind. And this is back in 1962. Dr. King was in Iowa, of all places. I say that because there are very few black people in Iowa in 1962, for sure. And I am looking at a picture from that visit, and he is the only black face in the room. And he spoke at a small college, Cornell College in Mount Vernon, Iowa. And he said this, and this is, yes, how it happens. I am convinced, Dr. King, that men hate each other because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. And they don't know each other because they don't communicate with each other. And they don't communicate with each other because they are separated from each other. And I think, I don't think anything ever for me, and then I first came upon that quote when I was young, but that distilled it for me. The danger of staying stuck with our own kind. It's why I developed an antipathy toward schools that separate out certain people. So that would be religious schools, parochial schools, where your kids are only with their own kind in one respect. And then, of course, the private schools in which kids are with their own kind, which is to say almost overwhelmingly white and wealthy. And I just believe that public education had been, I don't know that it is anymore because whites fled. Whites fled because I guess they didn't want their little kitties in a classroom with different kinds of little kitties. Didn't have as much money, different color skin, ate different weird foods, that kind of thing. And yet, I know I've spoken many times before that what I got from public education more than anything, and it wasn't that great an education, I don't think. It was not a prep, you know, it wasn't, there were no special classes for those of us going on to college. Most kids didn't ever go on to college. It was a basic reading, writing, and arithmetic education. But that's not the part that stuck with me. What stuck with me was learning that people came in all kinds of different flavors, that all families weren't like mine. You know, I've often told this silly little story about going to a friend's after school and finding that their butter wasn't in the refrigerator. And I was appalled, but it was soft. I thought that was wondrous. I never got over it. Seems like a silly little thing. But all those silly little things taken together open up a person's life and make them less capable of saying, I know the right way to do things, or my mom and dad do things in the right way, because you see that there's all these different ways. All these different ways. And that is enriching. Separation from each other means we don't communicate with each other, Dr. King said. And not communicating with each other means that we don't know each other. And what you don't know, you often fear. And what you fear, you often hate. You hear my dog retching in the background. He's here. dog walker can't get here. Okay. I didn't know I was going to say all that. So, what do I have? I admit, I was not a great fan. I bailed on the Steelers third quarter. I mean, I could see where that was going. I loved the first quarter. I really did. I mean, we scored first. We led at the end of it. Or maybe they tied it up by then. And it was a defensive game. I just, you know, I love that. And then, of course, Mahomes got his mojo. Whatever. That's the end of that. Okay. What do we have to talk about? I don't know. There was that thing that happened in Texas in that synagogue. And, you know, it's odd because just the day before, I spent almost an hour watching a Zoom gathering of people from all faiths coming together to talk about an anti-Semitic act that happened in their community. And actually, this was Aetna. I don't know that this ever got covered in the local news. In fact, I don't think a lot of the anti-Semitic stuff that's going on in mostly the East End ever warrants much coverage. I don't know. And I say I don't know because I don't watch local TV news, so I don't know. But it often doesn't even make the paper. Anyway, it was people from all religions. It was community leaders in Aetna. And it was very moving. It was really very moving what people were saying. And how each time one of these acts happens, you've got, as a community, to push back, come together. It's what happened in this little town, Colleysville, yesterday or Saturday. It's what happened there, that immediately the faith leaders, who all knew the rabbi that was being held hostage, worked with him. He's a rabbi who truly values interfaith dialogue. And so they were there for them. But one of the things that riveted me when I watched the Zoom meeting was the remarks by a woman, blanking on her name, who is employed by the United Jewish, Pittsburgh Jewish Federation. And she has a job that didn't exist. I don't know, a decade ago, 2 decades, I don't know. She's in charge of security. Sure. She's in charge of security. And she spent, I forgot what you said, 30-some years with the FBI. I believe she was with the FBI when Tree of Life massacre occurred. And now she works with the Jewish community here and Jewish facilities, synagogues and other places, to safeguard those places. And this is not new. It's just much more intense than it ever was. And I don't know if when you, those of you who go to church, can you imagine going to church and going through a metal detector or going to church and having obvious, you know, guards around. Going to church and only having one door available to you to walk in. That's what it's like going to a synagogue. But then I recalled that back when I was a kid in Green Bay in the 50s, there was only one synagogue in that town. Still is. And there were police that were stationed outside the synagogue when we had the High Holy Days. And I do remember, as a kid, walking out of the synagogue and having people, cars drive by, screaming anti-Semitic things. But it's gotten more so, and it's happening all over the world, and we know what that's about. I don't know. A guy comes all the way from Great Britain, and then two-thirds of the way across the country. He wants to make a statement. He wants to get someone who he believes is falsely imprisoned out. And he had to go looking for a place where there were a bunch of Jews, because he decided he had to go to where Jews were. Even though Jews had absolutely nothing to do with whatever it was that concerned him. I don't know. I'm so sick of it, and I'm so worried about where it's heading. And then 60 Minutes last night had this thing where they went back to try to figure out who fingered, who ratted on the Anne Frank's family. And I turned that piece off in absolute disgust halfway through it. Did you watch it? I turned it off in absolute anger. First of all, Anne Frank is dead. She's long dead. She is everybody's favorite dead Jew. It's dead Jew porn. I say leave that beautiful young spirit alone. What the hell does it matter who got shaken down, who ratted on her for fear of their own lives or whatever? Did they nail another Jew? I turned it off. And I turned it off when some guy was being interviewed. He was like a psychologist or something, and they were trying to figure out what kind of person, I believe the question was put to him, what kind of person would turn in Anne Frank's family, as if Anne Frank's family was anything back in 44. They were just another cowering, terrified group of Jews desperately trying to keep out of the Nazis' deadly clutches. They weren't anybody else. There were Anne Franks and Frank families all over, and they were dying by the millions. And this guy actually said he thought that whoever would do this would have to be like a psychopath or some kind of a And I just, that's when I lost it. What? There were a million raging psychopaths or sociopaths all over Europe? Those were everyday humans. Everyday humans. People like we know, you know. Who under fear and stress crack. Or doesn't even take maybe much. They give up anything that they think might help them. The whole premise of this. Oh. You know what I was reminded of? And you'll think that I'm making this up, but I am not. I have been in that building where the Frank family hid out in Amsterdam. And I've been in the annex, as they called it, where they were. I've seen the room where she wrote. It is, of course, today now a museum. But it was like maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago. Somebody can look this up if you want. And I swear to God, some guy, some young man who was working at the museum was Jewish, and he wore a yarmulke, a skull cap, or word for them, skull cap. On his head, as a observant Jewish male will do, and as Jews do when they worship. It's a sign of humility that some God is over them. And he was told by the Anne Frank Museum, take it off. He was told that if he wanted to work there, he couldn't be wearing a yarmulke. The Anne Frank Museum. You can't make that up. And I believe it was because they said it might make some people uncomfortable who were coming to visit where the, you know, where the everybody's favorite Jew died. Everybody's favorite dead Jew. I don't know. I'm not remembering it well because at the time I was so, you know, sometimes reality is too much. You can't take it in. You can't parse it. Oh, here's some. Okay, I'll get on something a little less fraught, okay? God forbid we should be uncomfortable, any of us. I came upon a tweet that I just loved, and I'm sorry I can't. I had to look up who this person was, and I think, and I don't remember, his name is Brian DeLallo, and I think he's either the football or the wrestling coach at Bethel Park High School. Anyway, I know he's Bethel Park, and he's a coach. And he tweeted yesterday this. Love it. Due to expected severe weather, Monday's weightlifting workout has been canceled. Find an elderly or disabled neighbor and shovel their driveway. Don't accept any money. That's our Monday workout. I love that. And I'm sure not any of those kids because they're all in Bethel. But if you're an elderly person in Bethel Park, I hope you got one of these kids near you. I'm sort of hoping somebody will come by here and do my driveway because that, when I was out shoveling my rather long pathway, I mean, that's a workout. It is. And my old heart was pounding. And then I, of course, immediately remembered how every winter after a big snowfall, people drop dead while shoveling. Old people drop dead while shoveling. And I thought, you don't want to be the old person who drops dead while shoveling. Even though I know you feel fine, but you're clearly not in shape here. So, yeah, I'd love it if somebody came by. And remember the days when young kids would, on a day like this, run around knocking on your door and saying, do you want your, but they, I mean, they're doing it for money, which I don't blame them. Fine. That has happened to me only once here in this neighborhood. Three kids. And I loved it. I mentioned I was talking to my brother last night. And it was, I think, was it right after I mentioned this that he said, all right, you've depressed me enough, I'm getting off the phone. Yeah, I think it was. I think it was after I told him this. And maybe you've heard about this. It's, again, one of those things where you think, is that true? So as we know, and it's especially important because it's Martin Luther King Day, that racism in America is showing its extraordinary ugly face. The Republican Party is now a white nationalist party. Do you see what Trump said? He's now, I mean, he's a dangerous man. His talking points now are that white people are being denied care for COVID, that this is a way to kill off white people. I kid you not. And this, guys, is exactly how race wars, Holocausts happen. This is how it happens. It doesn't matter if the grievance is real, because what he said is not true. But whites in America, many whites in America, are feeling very aggrieved because there's a lot of people around. Well, there was this black guy as the president, for God's sake, for 8 years. And now there's a black woman as the vice president. And damn. Now, just remember Charlottesville. The Jews will not replace us. The Jews will not replace us. The Jews will not replace us. And so in this time when we need to be much more aware, what are these Republican state legislatures doing? They're passing laws saying that you cannot teach about American racism. Oh, man. Yeah. Uh-huh. Virginia, ladies and gentlemen, which we have been told, right, is now a purple state, definitely trending blue. Problem is they just elected, as we know, a Republican governor. Virginia has proposed what they call social studies reform legislation. And I actually looked at the bill. I mean, it's like what can be taught, what cannot be taught. And one of the things that they say will be taught is the debates between Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, the famous Lincoln-Douglass debates. It says it right on the official state of Virginia, and this will be the case, and we will allow the teaching of the Lincoln-Douglass debates, the debates between the president and Frederick Douglass. I read that, and I thank God did not have anything in my mouth because I would have spit it out. Lincoln didn't debate Frederick Douglass. This is the ignorance. This is the ignorance at the heart. These are the people who are going to what? Tell what we can teach our children? And as usual, they're trafficking in absolute idiocy. Abraham Lincoln never debated Frederick Douglass, for God's sake. Yeah, there were Lincoln-Douglass debates. It was an entirely different Douglass. He wasn't black. He was white. Stephen Douglass. But these are the brilliant folks who are going to redesign our curriculum. I've got a caller. Let's do it. Hello.
Is that me?
That's you.
Yeah. Hey, look at that. I was calling to talk about snow. But you switched up to this. And just... I think 3 days ago, I got a, you know, on Facebook, they say, you know, memories. This is something, hopefully I can read this, that I posted as a meme that I wrote about 3 years ago, because I'm terrible at reading. How can one not see is him? But looking through the prism of history, his story fits the schism, color separation, dividing a nation, with fear of immigration in the imagined nation. The Trump pets sound, lock her up as Trump pets round their ears with fears, jeers. Fake news takes cues from Hannity and Sandy. Fake tan and he skews the facts. Supporter attacks Jews for a billionaire tax cut. The bullshit, the school lit up with bullets. The fool sits on the stool, gets on Twitter, tweets bitter words, drops turds to the herds of angry folks, yokes them, provokes them, stokes them into a frenzy. Then see the win he wanted. He's haunted from being taunted, so he vaunted to the masses of asses, slow as molasses, who passes the tiki torch of scorched earth on fire, debt higher, long red tie. Are they so inept they don't get? They've been set up by a flim-flammer. They clamor at his feet for more deceit to feel complete. Rinse and repeat. Hopes in their eyes they cannot see. The lies cannot see. Nazi is him.
Wow. Clarence! Did you write that?
Yes. 3 years ago.
Will you send that to me?
I'll send you the meme. Yeah. I don't know if I still have the text, but it's in the meme form, but yeah, I'll send it to you.
Please, please, please.
Okay.
That is brilliant. And I need to see, you know, I need to see the words to get, yeah. I mean, all those internal rhymes and the ways you were playing with. Wow. Well done.
Thank you. I'll end with
yeah,
sir. George Costanza always says end on high notes. So.
Well, I was going to say for all the good it'll do, but wow, wow.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you. What were you going to say about snow?
Oh, I was talking about being old and not being able to shovel snow. First thing I thought was Sam, but that's a whole other story. But
no, I thought that too. No, I thought that too, and I'm going to – no, are you kidding me? And I am going to text my son later and say, you know what you can get me for my birthday? It's my birthday tomorrow. You can get me a clear driveway, okay? Yeah.
Last year, you know, when I wasn't as healthy as I am now, I text two nephews. It was one of those heavy snows, and I said, one of you guys are going to have to come and take my driveway. Both of them responded, okay. And then in the morning, one nephew showed up, shoveled the driveway. We had a conversation. And and the next, and then, because he worked in the evening, he's, you know, And the other nephew who works in the day, he delivers salami bread. Early, he comes back and says,
Yeah.
He was like mad. He said, oh, Clarence, you shoveled the driveway. I went, Kevin shoveled it. He goes, I would have done it. I'm like, oh, well, I'll make sure you get to do it next time, Terry.
Oh, aren't you a lucky uncle? Wow, that's wonderful.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And then one time, I go out and the driveway's shoveled. I'm like, I wonder which. So I text my nephews, who shoveled my driveway? Both of them text back. They didn't. And it wasn't until the summertime. My next door neighbor, her name is Trish. I'm over there. Her son comes back. He's back from the service, and I'm over there telling stories to his wife about how, him as a little skinny kid. Now he looks like a superhero, And then I went, wait a second. I said, Trish, did you shovel my driveway last winter? She goes, yeah. I said, okay. I really appreciate it, because she knows that I have a bad heart, And she was I put the thing up about my nephews, And that's what I thought about. I told my nephews, I want to be one of those old dudes laying in the driveway for trying to, be macho. That's right. The woman next door shoveled my driveway.
Fine. All the women in my family are the shovelers. Yeah.
They're perfectly fine with me. I know that.
I love it. Thank you, Clarence. You take care of that heart of yours. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I take so many pills. It's like, I say that my joke is, it's supposed to take some of the pills with meals. And I said, by the time I take all the pills, I'm full.
You take care of yourself.
I do take care of myself. I can shovel my driveway now. No problem.
Okay, you.
Okay. I'll send you
thank
that.
You. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, that was wonderful. Wow. Oh. So everybody, with this constant, they oversold this storm. I just want to say that. This would be a normal snowfall where I come from. And they made it sound like the apocalypse. And, of course, everybody runs out, thinking like we're all going to be snowed under for 5 weeks or something. And people go running out for the essentials, right? What are they? Oh, toilet paper's right up there. Toilet paper. And then bread and what else? Milk, eggs. What are considered like the staples? Everybody's running out to the grocery stores. You know where I run? The state store. That's correct. And then I happen to read, and I still don't believe it's true because it seems so bizarre. But the Liquor Control Board, for those of you not in Pennsylvania, that is the state agency that controls the sale of alcohol in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that has no private liquor stores. The state has them. And turns out that the cash cow of the Liquor Control Board is Allegheny County. Has the highest sales of liquor, way over. Now you and you're thinking, wait a minute, how could it be Allegheny County? They're at the other end of the state. You got Philadelphia, for God's sakes. That's a whole lot bigger than Allegheny County. What? I don't have the numbers in front of me. It was mind-blowing. We, Allegheny County, buys a lot more alcohol. Philadelphia County. Even though we aren't, we don't have the population. So guys, I got to say, I don't know what that means. But then I just said, I don't run for the toilet paper. I run for the state store. So maybe I'm part of it. We got some drinkers around here. Jeez. And I guess because of the pandemic, it's just gotten more so. Not that you care about this, but it's something, actually, it's why I ended up talking to my brother last night. I was so stunned when I saw that the University of Michigan, considered, by the way, one of the finest universities in the country, that's not a, you know, preppy one. The University of Michigan fired its president. And they fired him because he had, here's what it says, an alleged affair with a subordinate. And they said that is inconsistent with promoting the dignity and reputation of Michigan's public flagship. Well, okay, fine. I didn't know anything about this guy. I don't know what the heck he did, what kind of a marauding sexual harasser he is. But then it turns out the Board of Regents who fired the guy ended up, because of our need for transparency, they released like 180-some emails that had been exchanged between the president and his love on University of Michigan email. umich.edu. And I thought, wow, why would they do that? That's awful. I mean, it just seemed like such a violation of two people's privacy. And I immediately, of course, started reading them. I thought, let's see. It was nothing. It was nothing. It was stuff like, I am so blown away that a university would humiliate somebody like this. First of all, it was clear that this is a consensual relationship. And nothing torrid was ever said. There is nothing there. Have we lost our friggin' mind? So I called my brother and I said, what the hell? And he said, yeah. So he tells me, of course, the rest of the story. The rest of the story is they didn't particularly like this president. They were trying to push him out for some time. They had agreed to for him to leave like in 2 years with his unbelievably really nice severance package had been negotiated. And they glommed onto this, an anonymous tip that he was having an affair with somebody subordinate to him. If you're the president of the university, everybody in that entire institution, and that's some 46,000 people, are subordinate to you. And this way, they clawed back the money they were going to give him when they shoved him out. There's just something so tawdry about it, so tone deaf, so god awful. And my brother says he doesn't really, you know the guy, didn't care. He says the guy was unpopular, but he said the emails, because he had looked through them too, he said, my god, there's something really outrageous that we have, especially it seems in the academy, the inability to understand what a real abuse of authority is and what is. But is just two people who have obviously fallen in love. Incredible. And I can't believe this is going to, well, it's just beyond belief. I don't know. I got another caller. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Roger from Bellevue.
Hey,
Unfortunately, I think my wife and I probably contributed a lot to that Allegheny County liquor store sales increase.
Yeah, well, I've done my part.
Oh, my gosh. And I've got to get it and get a handle.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah, we're all. Yeah, see you at the next AA meeting. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That was wonderful by Clarence. Oh, my gosh. I assume you'll tweet that later on or something?
Yes.
We'll get it out. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And as far as the storm is concerned, all I've ever sold me back in the day, it wasn't, but these days we don't get storms anymore, so I guess it is our new great storm.
Oh, I love it. It makes everything beautiful and quiet. What I love is the sort of silence that comes with it. It blankets, literally. And so, you know, tones down the usual noise. And I think it's just wonderful. For me, it's like a respite.
Yes, it is. I'm just I've been hunkered down. I have a question about the, we're talking about the Virginia governor and all these people who don't want critical race theory being taught. When it comes to real history, I mean, are they going to say we can't talk about slavery anymore? We can't talk about great biographies of Frederick Douglass or Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad? I mean, I'm really concerned. Are we not going to be able to talk about Martin Luther King and the peaceful marches that turned into, riots because the police sicked their dogs on them and fire hoses and stuff like that? What is it? What's going to be the line in the sand? Oh, you cross the line. Now you're teaching critical race theory. I'm really curious and I'm kind of nervous about it, too.
Well, I mean, there's no way they can avoid the reality of slavery in America. What they can do is try to do what they've been doing since the Civil War and even before it. And that is, suggest that the slaves are actually rather happy, well cared for, fed and clothed, and look at them singing and dancing, right? So, I don't know. That's what they could do. You got to teach ignorance, I guess, if they're going to stay in power. They clearly intend to. Then they've got to create a new reality. And they will sell it. They sell lies constantly. Constantly. And so they will codify the lies. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, but it is because we need desperately to have Americans come to terms with this history and present if we're to avoid a horrific future, and they don't want. I mean, it's just amazing. It's amazing. We probably won't be able to, talk about – you think anyone will learn about Dylan Root, recent history, going into a black church and praying with these wonderful people that were at the church and then mowing them down because they're black? Do you think any of that will be? I don't know. I guess. In a country where a huge percentage of people want to look at Kyle Rittenhouse as a hero, I think anything can happen.
Then it is the end. If that's how we're going to go, then it is the end. And because we'll be just like you know, in some ways like China. I have a friend who teaches university at NYU, and he's in the medical field too. He has a lot of students from China, and they were flabbergasted at how we talked about Donald Trump, because you don't give him respect. You don't do this.
Yes, right.
And so they have been so conditioned to bow down to their
authority,
hierarchy. I mean, what's going to make us any different?
Nothing, apparently. And America, what worries me is that the white nationalists are zealous and they're passionate and they're armed and ready to die. And our side is indifferent at best, out to lunch at worst, or throwing up our hands in despair. I don't know, Roger, what's going to happen, but I wouldn't, as you know, do not have a lot of hope. I feel like this country is, in many respects, in its death throes. Mm-hmm. And I'm not alone in that. People all over the world are looking in disbelief and astonishment at what's happened to us.
Well, all I can say is I'll see you at the liquor store then.
Okay, all righty. Thanks, Roger.
Bye.
Allison sent me a beautiful still life called Snow Preparation, and it's really lovely. Did somebody actually painted this? It's a painting. It's got milk and toilet paper and a loaf of bread and coffee. Is that it? Where's the bottle of wine? Okay, but that's still life for anxious Americans with a storm approaching. Okay, well, guys, I'm pretty much talked out. Tell me not to go back out there with the shovel. It's hard for me not to. I see snow. I want to shovel it. It's in my Wisconsin bones. And I love to do it. I do. Although it's just... How much snow was there? The 7 inches or something? Big effing deal. Anyway. All right. My street, of course, has not been touched. But I guess it's good that it is a federal holiday because there are fewer people on the roads. Anyway. All right, guys. I'm done. I'm sorry if I was, particularly depressing. That's just the way it is. Susan will join us tomorrow. On Thursday, by the way, I have visiting us a blast from the past, and that would be historian Jared Day. He used to come on a somewhat regular basis. He taught history at CMU for 16 years. He's now in Connecticut. And he has a perspective on American history. And so maybe we'll hear what he has to say. I've not really talked to him about where he stands on the future of American democracy, but I don't know. So he'll be joining us on Thursday, so you can get somebody else's take and somebody with more historic chops than I have. Okay. Thank you very much. Try to find a youngin' to shovel for you. Unless you need the exercise, and do it yourself. Just take breaks. Want to be the old person face down in the snow. Stop babbling, Cullen, and say goodbye. Goodbye.
Lynn Cullen Live, Monday through Thursday, from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., and archived at pghcitypaper.com. The opinions expressed on Lynn Cullen Live are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of Pittsburgh City Paper or its advertisers.